Welcome to the Digicom Cafe, located at the intersection of faith and technology. We hope you enjoy our cafe experience where we cater to your digital and spiritual appetites, in an effort to make this world a better and kinder place, one story at a time. Please stand by as we get ready to launch this episode of Radio on the Rocks. You are about to listen to a Radio on the Rocks Cafe Cast interview, which occurred on June 6, 2019, in the Digicom Cafe Multimode Communications Network, with Danny J, KD5DLJ, and guest Bob Heil, K9EID, from Pleasant Hope, Missouri, who is the host of Ham Nation on Twit TV, and owner of Heil Sound. Listen as he tells his story of how he got into amateur radio and how it changed his life.
Well, thanks for having me. We've been trying to get together for a long time, but and keep me on the road and lots going on, but glad to be here and welcome to all of the listeners. I've been very fortunate, incredibly blessed through my life because things happen and you don't realize why or how, and all of a sudden, bingo, it happens. I had a high school chum. He was a year ahead of me in high school. 1956, and he got a ham license, and I started going down to his house because his father had just got a new Hammond organ, and I was playing accordion at the age of 10, so I went down to his house to play on his dad's new Hammond, and I'm going, what's all that noise in the back? And it was my friend George learning CW. He was learning to do the code so he could become a ham. Well, I followed in his footsteps, and I don't know where my life would be without George Crowder bringing me into this great hobby. Plus, and of course, his dad got me into the organ thing, and that's another side. It's a whole other aspect of my life because I still play, and I do concerts around the country. Have a theater organ here in my studio in the Ozarks, and we do a show every Saturday night on the shortwave WTWW at 7 o'clock.
That's actually I listened to that. We were up in Iowa visiting our daughter for our granddaughter's graduation, and we were walking down the gravel road out in the country of northeast Iowa, and I was listening to WTWW and your organ concert.
Goodness. But I got started in ham radio and I took to it really quick. My parents bought me a Harvey Wells TBS 50D and an SX99, and they're still here. I use them quite often. I'll be on the air in the morning with them. We have a bunch of guys at 9 o'clock in the morning on 3885. Of course, it's AM. It's my first love. And, I still have the transmitter. It's still original, tubes and all, and I just love all this stuff. Well, I got on the air on 6 meters. I was a technician. I became a technician for 17 years. I never listened below 50 megacycles. And that was the time when the bands were open 24/7. 6 meters sounded like 75 meters. I tell that to people today, and they kind of look at me like I'm crazy. No, I'm not crazy. Anybody that was around during that monstrous sunspot cycle, you will know that we experienced like never before. So every night I'd get on around 7 o'clock and I started hearing this signal. It was really weird sounding signal. And what is wrong with this guy's audio? And next night he was there again. I thought, what is going on? So I called him. I'm on AM, and he came back. I could tell he came back to me, but it was just so distorted. I'm messing around with all the knobs. Now, you understand, I'm brand new ham. And I hit the BFO switch, and all of a sudden, out of that speaker pops this great audio. He was on single sideband, 6 meters, 1956. Nobody was doing that. They hardly had single sideband on 20 meters and 75 and 40 and all that. So every night I would meet with him and he was so thrilled. I was 50 miles from here. He was in downtown or St. Louis and I was about 50 miles south in Marissa, Illinois, where I grew up. And here it was, he built this transmitter. And Tony Vitale had an article in QST in 1956 about putting one of the command transmitters on 6 meter sideband, and on sideband. So he, this K0DGE, he put it on 6 meters. Well, I was fascinated. Got to talking. His name was Larry. Oh, he was K0DGE. Every night we'd meet on the air. I was on AM. He was on single sideband. Amazing when I think about it. So at that time also, at the age of 15, I became the substitute organist at the Fox Theater in St. Louis on a monstrous four-manual Wurlitzer that came up out of the basement in a pit. And I played for 8 to 10 minutes in between the shows. Shows would last 3 hours, and I'd have to do something for 3 hours and come back. I told Larry I'd come in quite often. Had a driver's license when I was 15 from the state of Illinois that allowed me to drive from Marissa to the Fox. It actually stated that and on the back of the license. Anyway, I went there a few weeks later and looked. He gave me the address. I pulled up in front of this address, and it's KMOX CBS Radio. Larry Burroughs, K0DGE, was the chief engineer for CBS. So I went in, I asked for Larry, and here comes out, and just a nice-looking man, had on a suit and a tie, as all engineers did in those days. So he showed me the station, and my gosh, this was like unbelievable for this little, by that time I was 16. And I said, Larry, I said, could you build me one of those sideband transmitters? Oh, no, no, I can't do that. He looked me dead in the eye and he said, but I'm going to teach you how. And he did. We started working together and I built a 6 meter single sideband transmitter in 1956, 57 when I finished it. And I didn't know at the time, found out later, I was one of the first 10 in the country on 6 meter sideband. And I just went nuts over VHF. My wonderful parents allowed me to put up a 110-foot Roan with a 36-foot long Telerex 6 meter antenna. That was a wide space Telerex, just a monstrous antenna. On top of that, I had another 35-foot long 15 element that was on 2 meters. I built a 6 and 2 Thunderbolt amplifier, which put that single sideband signal on 6 and 2 meters and a kilowatt, actually about a kilowatt and a half. But these were things that I was fascinated. I was building stuff like crazy, and I didn't understand where it was going in my life, because at that time I was going to be a theater pipe organist, and that was going to be it, which I was, and I still am. And it just really became something that was very special. 1959, I get a call from Bob Drake of the Drake Radio Company and asked me if I could. He had heard about the fact I had this kilowatt on VHF sideband. And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, we have a thing here every year. Our club gets together and we have technical papers. People come in and tell us what they're doing, and this is fascinating because nobody knows anything about it. We want you to come and tell us. I'm going, oh boy, okay. So I met up with a guy on one of my nightly runs on 2 meters. He was about 50 miles away from me. I told him I was going to do this, and he said, I've always wanted to go. I knew they do this technical thing in Dayton. So he had a Bonanza airplane. We flew to Dayton, Ohio, to the Biltmore Hotel in downtown Dayton, 1959. There were 600 people there, and they had taken all the furniture out of the rooms on one floor. And one room was the Drake room, one was the Collins room, one was the Hallicrafter room, on and on and on. Wes Shum was there from Central Electronics. He is the guy that actually brought single sideband to amateur radio in 1948. So anyway, I gave my papers on how I built this thing and referenced Larry Burroughs quite often. Larry didn't want to come with me, couldn't get off work. I wanted him to go. Well, during that symposium, a guy from England said, "Hey, let me talk to you." He said, "We're looking for somebody like you. We have an antenna, and we want to make a test over here in the USA with it. Would you like to do it?" "Well, of course." "No, it's not in my vocabulary." I had these wonderful, wonderful parents. They just about allowed me to do anything. And so he sent the antenna over. There's many, many pictures of it. It was 128 elements on 2 meters, 50 foot wide, and I put it on a 50 foot Rhone. And it started a whole revolution with me. We were working things like crazy. I was doing moon bounce in 1962 with Bob Cooper, W5KHT, down in Oklahoma, Southern Illinois to Oklahoma. Nobody was doing that stuff. I just lucked into it. I didn't know what I was doing, but I had a lot of guidance from Larry Burroughs and all these wonderful people that would help me. My gosh, I was just a kid. So that was the start of all of that. I then got into a whole bunch of things of building. I just love to build and helping people build, because to me, that is ham radio. Just having a transmitter or handy talkie, whatever, that's all fun and games, and we need it for today for emergencies. But real ham radio is you get out a soldering iron and you build things. I just completed a year. I hope you guys have caught it. If you haven't, you can still catch it every night on Ham Nation, and that's every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Central. I started building the Pine Board project. Back in my early days, we were building transmitters on Pine Board. And so I started designing and building this, and each week we'd have a little 10-minute excerpt and how to do this, how that. And after a length of time, we had hundreds of people came out of the woodwork building this 75 and 40-meter transmitter, AM, of course. And I was just thrilled, because we're having all these people. Many of those people never owned a soldering iron. They had to go out and buy a soldering iron. And we'd answer questions each night on Ham Nation. And that's what it's all about for me. Ham Nation is it's a very special program all of its own. Leo Laporte has this great network. It's a high-definition video network. So not only you get to hear, but you can see all the many things that we do. And I started a thing called Smoke and Solder. And George Thomas kind of took that over for me and built all kinds of things. And these are things that ham radio is based on. And as I get further into my life, I jumped the gun there quite a few years on the Ham Nation thing, but there again, that building in me is still here. But I got tired of playing. I'd played about 12, 13 years, six nights a week, in the theaters and restaurants and all this. So I came back to my little town of Marissa, 50 miles southeast of St. Louis. I opened a music shop. I had a Hammond organ franchise, so I was selling Hammond organs. That was a big deal in those days. A lot of people would buy them for their homes. All of a sudden, one day, a guy comes in and he had this box. And he said, "Music shop, right? You repair stuff?" "Well, yeah, what you got?" "Well, I got a Fender." "You have a Fender? That's what's on my car, man." No. "This is my guitar amp. Now, you got to understand, I was so headlong. I am so focused on things that I do. I hardly knew who the Beatles were. Ask me about George Wright, Jesse Crawford, Lynn Larson, Gaylord Carter. These were all the stars of the theater organ." And he puts this thing up there, and it's a guitar amp, right? I turned it upside down. What did I find? A pair of 6L6s and a 5U4. That's what's in the modulator of my Harvey Wells. I knew the circuit well. So I turned it over, looked at it, and I figured, aha, I know what happened. He probably tried to make it go to 10. I would go to 12, and it only went to 10. He blew it up. So hams don't throw anything away. I go back to my junk box in the back of my store, get a pair of 6L6s, couple of screen resistors, because you know those screen resistors are going to die if he blew it up, which he did. So put all that together, new rectifier, bingo. In about 15 minutes, I had him all going. He was just freaked out. Wow, you didn't even have one of them schematic. No, I didn't have one of them schematic things. Well, all of a sudden, people started coming to me by the truckloads, and I do mean that. And these are people that were musicians playing guitar in bands, garage bands. Bands like REO Speedwagon, Michael McDonald, Danny Fogelberg. They weren't known by that. They were still in high school, but later on, that's what they became. But I helped them put their equipment together and kept it serviced and all of that. Started building some larger sound systems for them. So there you are, that ham radio was the actual education for me to start helping people. And I would rent Hammond organs to a promoter in St. Louis, 50 miles away, every Sunday. He would have stars from Nashville come in, well, once a month, and called Cavalcade of Stars. And I'd rent the Hammond organ to him. I'd go up there, and the sound system was atrocious. It was a little column with little 8-inch speakers in it to fill a 19,000-seat hall. Oh, yeah, sure. It was awful. But the hall was built back in the 30s. It wasn't made for entertainment. It was made for speeches and stuff like that, and I guess it was okay for that. Well, one day, I'm driving by the Fox. I hadn't been there in a few years because I hadn't been playing much. And I go around the back. I wanted to say hi to the stage manager. And there's these speakers. They're huge. And it turned out they were Altec A4s and Western Electric folded horns. I go inside. I go, hey, George Bales, what are you doing? He said, well, we're putting in a new sound system here. I said, what's all that out there? He said, well, that's the trash guy's going to. I said, wait a minute, you throwing that away? Yeah. I said, can I have it? Sure. So I went and rented a truck, took all that back to Marissa, and the ham radio in me, I started building a big hi-fi system. I am not looking beyond anything right now. I had heard that Macintosh are a good amp, so I bought some Macintosh amps. And I started putting all this together, and oh my gosh, it was really, really good. And what have I got here? So I asked the manager at the Keel, I said, hey, can I bring this up one of these times? Yeah, bring it on up. We've got Dolly Parton coming in next Sunday, and her and Porter Wagoner and Little Jimmy Dickens is quite a showcase. Why don't you bring it up? So I did. And, of course, I didn't know when no one else had not been doing this. Bingo. These people went crazy because they'd never sung through anything like that. Well, I had a manager that at that show came to me and said, I want to talk to you. Have you ever had this on tour? I said, well, no, what are you talking about? Well, I got this new little band out in Ohio, and we're going to do just a short little tour. And boy, this would really be a kickoff for them. We need something to send them off well because it's the brand new tour. Okay. So I had a couple of roadies from Carbondale, from SIU. They were my roadies. And so we all loaded just some of it. I didn't load the whole thing. We didn't need all of that. They were doing high school gyms. We go to Ohio, set it up, and the band went crazy. Whoa, never sung through anything like this. The second date, we discovered that the lead guitarist and I were both ham radio operators. That ham was WB6ACU, Joe Walsh and his James gang. It changed my life, and it actually changed the life and the position of what was happening in rock and roll. Finally, somebody could hear them. And it just became from there crazy, doing all kinds of little gigs here and there. But the biggie comes, and this is the highlight of this whole thing. In 1970, I get a call from George Bales. Remember him? The stage manager at the Fox Theater. Hey, Heil, you still have those big speakers? Yeah, I do. Why? He said, do they work? I said, yeah, I've been using them with a lot of little bands around. He said, well, I got a big band and I got a big problem. What's that? He said, it's 4 o'clock and this band come in here a little bit ago and they don't have any PA. The story was, and it's really now rock and roll history, this band was on probation out of the state of California. Their sound man, he was not supposed to be out of the state. The FBI and the DEA discovered that. So they go to their show the night before that, which was in New Orleans. They sat in the back of the hall, very quiet. When the show was over, the band came on to St. Louis. Now, they didn't have cell phones in that day, so nobody's going to be able to talk to anybody. And sound man, he loaded the truck and put his padlock on the back of the truck, and about when he did that, the DEA and the FBI put a padlock on him, took him and the truck off the run. Now, nobody knew this. The band didn't know it until the next day. They get it at 4 o'clock. Where's our gear? What's happening? So they call back to their office in California on the wired phone at the Fox and found out I was leasing jail. What do we do now? So George Bales called me. And he said, you want to talk to this guy? Tell him what you got. Maybe you can help him. He hands the phone to Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead. And if any of you are historians of rock and roll, and especially the Dead, you know the story quite well. They wrote a song called Truckin', all about that famous time. And we did the show that night. They were just blown away. They were so thrilled because they hadn't played through anything like that. So they said, can you go on the rest of the tour? Because our sound guy's in jail. I said, well, okay. So my two roadies, luckily, and here's a point, key point, John knew every song of the Grateful Dead. He was a Grateful Dead head. That really helps when you know the music of the people you're mixing. So they were absolutely thrilled to go on tour with the Grateful Dead. This is a dream you have. And so we hit the front page of Billboard magazine, and I didn't know all this was happening. And it was at this little music shop in Marissa, Illinois, got the Grateful Dead concert after it was confiscated and all that, da-da-da. So all of a sudden, we did that tour. It worked out well. But I started getting calls from all kinds of people. One of them, one day, came from a guy. He said, you got that big PA, right? And I said, yes, sir. Who's it? He said, this is the Who. I said, no, who are you? He said, this is the Who. Okay. All right. He said, we need that in Boston tomorrow. I said, not possible. What do you mean, not possible? You're talking to the Who. I said, I don't know who you are, but the PA is on tour with Chaka Khan because she's using one of our talk boxes. Another famous history part of my life. We'll maybe touch on that later. Joe Walsh and I did for Rocky Mountain Way. I said, no, it can't be done. He said, we'll find somebody to cover it. I said, even if we could, we can't drive it. We were the first company to put semis together. We had a 40-foot semi. That's all they had in the day. Not air ride even. And we could put everything in it. The lights, the sound, everything all went together. Managers loved me because before that, man, somebody had come in a Volkswagen van with half of the stuff, and somebody had come in something else and a pickup truck and didn't get there at the same time. Shows would not happen. Anyway, I solved that. I'm a straight man in a crazy world. A straight man. I've never tasted beer. I've never smoked a cigarette. And I'm running around with the biggest drug addicts in the world at that time. But that's okay. That's okay. They respected me because I had a soldering iron. Pete Townsend always put it kind of cool. Leave the guy alone. He's got a soldering iron. He makes it sound good, and he can drive the truck. And I did. So anyway, I said, well, we can't drive to be in Boston. He said, well, put it on an airplane. I said, we can't do that. It's a semi. Well, no problem. Rent a Tiger Air Freight. They got planes as they got, that you can drive right up into them, 707s, and they're freighters. I said, you paying for this? Well, yeah. That's exactly what happened. It's the first time I ever rented a 707. And we flew to Boston, and another page in the history of rock and roll sound was the Who. They came over here without any kind of big PA, and the media was just blasting them the first couple of dates. Well, we turned that around when we got to Boston with them, and we were with them for, oh gosh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And there's so much history to that. And we did the Quadrophenia thing. Nobody had ever built a quad system. Pete wanted me to build a mixer and a system that we could direct Peter's voice around the hall and do it in stereo and do it in quad, because quad sound was pretty big right then. So that's exactly what we did. And it was just a real launch at that time. Everybody was after us, and we became the major sound system for rock and roll for many, many years, all because of ham radio. All because of it. I think about it so often. Even these days, I think, where in the world would I be? And I wonder how much time would have been lost of people trying to catch up with what we were doing if it wasn't because of ham radio. My friend George that introduced me to it, and so many people. Larry Burroughs was a godsend to me. And Paul Klipps, the father of the folded horn, and he called me in 1972. He said, you the guy's got that 20,000 watt PA? And I said, yes. He said, that's a Klipps here. And I'm going, whoa. He said, I want to come and see that. Okay. Paul Klipps came and spent a day with me, and I was so amazed, because I figured he was going to cut me off at the knees, because I didn't know what I was doing. I'm a ham. I did have good ears. I will tell you this. Listen up, please. Listen. This next sentence, very important to you. I learned to listen by voicing and tuning that pipe organ at the age of 15 and 16. It hadn't been played in 20 years. Stan Kahn, my teacher, we would, late night, after the show closed, we'd voice and tune it. Tuning's nothing. I just tune the octaves. But the harmonics, we had to have each note beside each note sound just like the one beside it. All tuning harmonics, listening to all the little subtleties. A lot of people don't know how to listen. They only hear. You want to listen for all of the little things underneath the harmonics that are there in the human voice, in the instruments, and whatever. That, I didn't know then, but that really changed my life, probably some of yours, because learning to listen, I was able to bring things to the public that would not have been done. And I was so blessed by that. And Paul Klipps taught me so much, took me back down to his place in Hope, Arkansas. We talked more and more about harmonics. We talked about phasing. We talked about transient response, dynamic range. Do you ever hear of that anymore? No, you will from me, but who else? No, we got this matching microphone. Hi, oh, by God, it's a matching microphone. The only damn thing matching today, they paint them the same color, they put their name on it, and they have fooled you in the ham radio industry for decades. And it pisses me off so much, because nobody listens. My God, matching. No, they're just painted the same color. These companies, and now I work for these companies. That's another thing that happened along the way. I work for Icom. I designed the equalizer. And I jumped that. I'll tell you that in a minute. I'll go back to that in a minute. I know what they're doing. And they don't design their microphones and audio. They just have some little OEM company paint it the same color. And hey, does it have the right plug on it? I guess makes the meter move. It makes me sick, because I listen to these things on the air. And my listener, being able to listen, just drives me insane. And then I'll hear a conversation of, well, you sound just right, Bill. Bill's so damn bassy, you can't understand him. or he's so tinny noisy you can't get any of his syllables. It's sad. And that's why I said, okay, we're going to do something about this. I'd been off the air in 12 years. I sold my sound system. I got tired of all that. When punk rock came in and all that, I said, goodbye, see ya. Because all my big acts had left the market for a while. Back in 1980, the music business was pretty slow. So I said, see ya. Come back, turned on my KWM2, and oh my God, I'm going, what happened? I turned on my KWM2, and this is what I heard. Hi, how you like my MC50? Isn't it good? Yeah, it's really good, man. Oh, boy, that compressor works great. You sound good. What? What in the hell happened to my gorgeous Art Collins audio? What happened? Oh, hi, I'll shut up. It's matching. Yeah, right. Sure was, wasn't it? I'm going, uh-oh. So, in 1982, I built a very interesting product that changed ham radio. A two-band equalizer, analog equalizer. Bass was set at about 160 hertz, and the mid, the other treble was set at about 2.5K. I learned how to do that from Paul Klipsch. What frequencies? Just because you have an EQ, I got an EQ. Yeah, what is? Where is it? Well, it's bass and treble. Where is it? Because you can buy equalizers today, little Behringers and stuff, and the bass is set down at 50 hertz, and the treble is set up at 12K. They're made for music. What happened to my 2.5K? Ham radio's only 3K wide. So you better have something at 2.5K. Paul Klipsch got me into learning about the Bell Labs. You want to go do some of this. So I hope you're taking notes. Go look up the Bell Lab studies of 1920s late. They discovered that the telephone system wasn't right, and they had been working for years on it. Well, it was okay. All the frequencies are there. All of the voltages are there. Why doesn't it sound okay? So they put Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson, two Bell Lab scientists on it. You know what they found? Your ears. What? What are you talking about, Hal? I hear fine. No, you don't. Go look up the Fletcher-Munson curve and you'll discover, oh my God, I don't hear flat. And I have big holes. If you chart your ears, it looks like a ride at Disneyland. But see, you didn't know that. Nobody's ever told you that before. I learned it from Paul Klipsch. I learned it from Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson. I learned it from all these greats that were presented before me. God put me in the midst of all these incredible scientists. I'm here to pass it on to you, and I'm doing it in the form of products also. But I built this equalizer. It ended up as the front cover and won they do a cover award in QST for 1982 July. I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I just built it because I needed it for me. Well, as it turned out, it changed ham radio. Later on in 1999, I began corresponding with Dr. Inoue, who owns ICOM. He starts writing me letters. He's got one of my equalizer boxes and my Goldline microphone. Whoa, wait a minute. This guy owns ICOM. Why isn't he using his own? Because his own doesn't work well, and he knows it. So he said, I'm thinking about a new line of radios, and I want to put your equalizer in it. And so I worked with ICOM when they started the Pro 1, Pro 2, Pro 3, all the way through to the 7300, the 7610. They all has my two-band equalizer in it. A couple years later, Dr. Hasegawa wanted to do it better. So we did a parametric EQ for his 9000 Yaesu. What a beautiful piece of gear that was. And that has a parametric EQ and all of them all the way out to the 1200. So I work with all these people, and then I started building my own microphones specifically for ham radio. And Joe Walsh came back, and we've been friends all these years, very close friends. And in 2006, he said, you got to build me a better microphone for my stage. I said, why? What's wrong with the Shure? He said, have you listened lately? No. He said, they're terrible. I said, why does everybody use them? He said, habit, ego. I got me an SM58. Well, good for you. But it doesn't sound good. They got to equalize the hell out of it. So I don't have to do anything. So how cool to have Joe Walsh, one of the leading entertainers that has incredible hearing. He knows about listening. Be my beta tester. And we did some pretty fascinating things, and it continues on and on and on. We could be here for hours telling you some of the great histories of all that. Because Joe and I work together very well. We understand each other. We're both hams. We built a talk box. I forgot that one. He was going to do this new band called Barnstorm in 1972. But he said, I want to do this talk box thing. He did it in a studio with a little funnel thing. How are we going to do it live? So we came up with a live, high-powered version and did Rocky Mountain Way. In 1974, a gal was married in our home, Penny McCall. And a lot of that happened where people that came over here from England and so on would get a six-month green card and have to go back or get married. She says, hey, I'm with Peter Frampton now, and I want to send him a Christmas present. I got to give him a Christmas present, but don't send me a guitar. I sent Penny McCall a talk box for Peter Frampton's Christmas of 1974. Want to talk about change the rock and roll world? It absolutely made Peter's entire persona. Think about it. Where would he be without all of his Rocky, do me how, do, show me the way, that was his big one. Do me like you do. And the talk box is his glory. And he does a lot of interviews, and he always praises me for it. And I appreciate that. But we are very, very, very good friends. And whenever you see Peter on tour, it will have a Heil talk box. And there's a lot of others. Slash, Bon Jovi. He helped made Bon Jovi's career with Living on a Prayer. And I could be here all afternoon telling you all the many people that this has happened, because they call me to help them. Because they know I've helped others. And it's all about ham radio. I'm not an engineer. I barely made it out of high school, because I was playing the organ. I was making a lot of money as a high school student playing the organ. Okay, but it's it's all happened through the years, and now we're building all kinds of other products. The new parametric receive audio system, it's a miracle box, because zero of these receivers have decent audio. I know, I work for them, and I bitch at them all the time. They won't do anything about it. Even the biggies of $15,000, $10,000, $4,400, 1 watt, 10% distortion, and a 3-inch speaker. You call that good? Oh, my God, the distortion when I listen to these things, because I listen. I hear all that distortion. Oh, my God. So I've always done other things. But about 2 years ago, I said, I am going to solve this for everybody. And we built the parametric receive audio system. You come out of the line out of your receiver, and oh man, unbelievable. And what's really cool about it is I'm getting a lot of people that wear hearing aids, and they can't hear their ham radio very well. Some of them have given up ham radio until they get the PRAS, and some of them, I saw a couple at Dayton, and they started crying. They said, you gave me my radio back, because I don't even need my hearing aids with this thing. So there again, we're building products to help people. And headphones, the Pro 7, every DXpedition in the last number of years have used the Pro 7. It is the masterful headphone. And there again, I work with the guys that are out there in the trenches telling me what they want. And I'm not afraid to try something and fail, because that means I'll come back and make it work. So we're very, very happy. And we continue to bring all kinds of wonderful things. I wrote a couple of books. If you haven't seen, or if you don't have, the Heil Ham Radio Handbook, I wrote this some years back. But oh, man. Yeah, you got all all kinds of books out there, but you got to be a third degree engineer to understand them. That's not me, buddy. It's probably not you. This thing is loaded with very cool drawings, like some cartoons even, because it's not an engineering book, but boy, it sure teaches you what we need to know about this hobby. And it's something that nobody's ever done. Their ego gets a little high. Look how smart I am, man. I'll bring you all. No, I don't hear about it. It was about 1978. I wrote a book called The Practical Guide for Concert Sound. And we just went through the second printing. We're now redoing the third printing. You talk about simplistic. I can't tell you how many hundreds, if not more, thousands of sound men learned how to do what they do today for the greats from that book. And there again, I bring you all the things that I learned from Paul Klipsch. I bring you all the things from Dr. Fletcher, Dr. Munson, Wes Shum, all these greats that passed my life, and I pass it on to you. And books are all available from the stores or on our website. Our website's loaded if you haven't spent any time on it. There's a lot of stuff, heilsound.com. A lot of really interesting things that you can learn. And I get sometimes a couple hundred emails a day, and I answer them all. I'm on the air usually every day doing something, but I'm on that email a lot because I don't let anything go by. Sometimes it might be a couple of days if I get really bombarded, but I love this hobby. I love everybody in it, and I want you to experience the same incredible things that this hobby's brought to me. And it's all about communications, so I do hope that we can help you along the way. I know we have microphones and headsets to do it. You got any questions? Send them along, but don't be shy, and we'll get it going for you no matter what. But the main thing is to remember that there's so much to learn in amateur radio, and we're doing it every day. Even 63 years I've been in this hobby, and every day I learn something else. I really do. Wow, how come I didn't think about that? Or how'd that happen? So I hope that you guys keep up with some of it. Wednesday nights, we're on Ham Nation. If you haven't seen the show, please do. And if you go there and you want to look at this pine board project, go to my website, heilsound.com. Go on the ham radio side. All the way down at the bottom, there's about 50 pages and all the little video clips from each week. I'll show you how to build it. And it amazes me how many guys and gals. I got a 12-year-old gal, had to go buy a soldering iron. Her dad helped her buy a soldering iron. I got a 90-year-old priest that's retired. So every genre is there, but we're all learning together. And I have them on the air. I've worked several of them. That's the fun part, is putting it on AM. Bingo, there's another pine board guy. So, oh gosh, it's just way, way, way over the top. And we're still keeping in the other thing going. The other side of the coin is everybody from Carrie Underwood to Keith Urban, Charlie Daniels, dozens and dozens. Eric Church, ZZ Top. Of course, I've been with ZZ. I did the first tour ZZ did. I have a picture. They didn't have beards. Really, their first tour. They were brand new in the market. I kid them about it every once in a while. But that's how far back I go, and we're still doing it for the newcomers to the market. And Joe and I are still great friends and doing crazy stuff. He's on Ham Nation with me every once in a while. So you want to pay attention to some of that. But again, anything I can help you with, send me an email. It's very, very simple. My call, K9EID. Edward Ida David at ARRL.net or Bob at Heil Sound. Bob at Heil Sound, HEILSOUND.com. And I will get back to you. And no questions. And get this, I'll finish with this. I'm serious about this. No question is dumb the first time. So remember that. Bring it on. Let's see what we can do to help you enjoy this hobby more, as I have.
Wow, you've been the easiest guest I've ever had to interview. It has been a fascinating story. And I've walked through some of your shoes way back when I got my license back as a junior in high school, and I built my own little transmitter, QRP transmitter. Shortly after that, built an entire Heathkit SB-102, SB-200 linear 630 station console. But kids nowadays don't have that opportunity. Everything is surface mount. They've got it in their cell phones. And I'm just wondering how you approach reaching young people for this hobby, seeing as it's so different from when we grew up.
Well, it is. And the sad part of it is so many of these clubs, they have schools and teach the kids. Okay, fine. They go get their license. They give them a license, three guys, you know, and sign their license. Okay, go home. See you later. They don't have Elmers. They don't have teachers. I was fortunate. I had the Wes Shums. I had the Larry Burrows. And these guys were always very, very helpful. And they're not there anymore. They send you home with a handy talkie. Hello. And it's really sad. There's so much more to this hobby. And you can build. Amoco, great company back in the 50s. Amoco has recently been bought by a Russian man, a very kind Russian man. And he is reproducing the little two-tube 75 or 40 meter AM transmitter. Wow. And we built it on Ham Nation here a couple months ago. And so many guys they're building this thing. But the thrill is they put it on the air and get to talk to somebody. Wow. And a lot of CW and stuff like that. So there are things you can do to build. And you just have to dive in. Don't be afraid. And pine board is one of them that'll help a lot of them. But I always find that the fascinating thing when I find a young person that is new into the hobby or wants to get into the hobby, I do not give him a handy talkie. I bring him in here. We dial up anything, whichever band's going well that day. And we talk to somebody, and I'm in the center of the country here. We talk to somebody in California. We talk to somebody in Canada. We talk to somebody in England. We talk to somebody in South America. You want to see somebody light up? Check out that youngster's eyes. Whoa! That is what drives you. It's what drove me when I made my first contact. Other than my friend George, it was just down the street. My first contact was in New Hampshire on 6 meters, because 6 meters was open all the time. I mean, you never forget those things. And that's what we have to do, is to show them the wow factors of this hobby. And the wow factors are putting a few things together, plugging it up, and making it work. That gets them every time.
Well, we sure appreciate all that you've done for the hobby and helping others, being a good Elmer. And I realize that was the theme of the Hamvention this year. And I'm seeing more emphasis on young people. That's one of the things we're striving to do here, is reach young people, but starting with what they have in common, and that's their smartphone. In fact, my 11-year-old grandson just upgraded from his tech that he got 6 weeks ago to a general class, and now he's working on his extra. I'm actually going to take my extra class test Tuesday coming up, and we'll be interviewing John and his wife from Ham Test Online. They've got a great service. So there's a lot of good things happening, but I surely do miss some of the old technology that we grew up on. And it's neat that you've got Ham Nation to promote some of these things and teach people how to do that. We really appreciate you and what you're doing, your efforts, and everyone that's part of the Ham Nation family. We just watched the episode today, and I know Tamitha Scove has said the same thing, that we have a generation of Mars, the Mars generation, and they think they can just use a phone up on Mars even to communicate, but that's not the case, as she said. We need to understand a little deeper how these things all work. And I have to confess, I'm a little ignorant on some of these things. I have not delved into the technology behind it and understanding it properly. And I'm forcing myself to do this now by upgrading to my extra class before my grandson beats me. But
how old is he?
He's 11 years old.
Is he on the air at all?
Well, he's using Zello. We're using Zello in our multi-mode network here. We've got DMR, D-Star, Fusion, Hamshack Hotline, PNET, Zello, TeamSpeak, all of them linked together. And so he doesn't have much access way down in the valley. You and I are both in the Ozarks. In fact, our signals here can kind of reveal that. We're getting a little bit of the typical dropout things that you get with maybe some slower internet speeds. But you're up north in Missouri, and I'm down here in Arkansas in the Ozarks out in the country with kind of slow speed. So we are hearing some of those anomalies. But he's down in the valley, and all he's got is the internet. And so he's using a tablet on Zello, and he's having a ball making friends with people around the world. He called me the other day, said, "Papa, I just talked to a guy in Iceland." And he's so tickled about that, just like you said. But my struggle is, how do you get them maybe into some of the deeper things that we've experienced? They're just throwaway items anymore, you know? Like I say, the surface mount radios are getting so cheap, and I don't know. Band conditions have been poor, too, so there's really not a lot of activity on the HF bands that they can get involved in. But we're doing our best to attract this younger crowd and mentor them and show them some of the fun we have and how it brings the whole world together.
Yeah. My whole thing is to make them work on an antenna, build an antenna, put them in the car, go to Lowe's, buy 66 feet of wire, come back home, cut it in half, and take a piece of plexiglass, or you can do a piece of plywood, whatever, drill about 6 holes in it, and make an insulator. Take a piece of RG58 coax. Center goes to one lead, shield goes to another. Hang it up in a tree. It doesn't have to be high, 10, 15 feet, however you can throw it. Plug it into a radio, a transceiver. And what I do is I go out and try to find I did this on Ham Nation not too long ago. We bought in a flea market at Dayton. Roger, my friend at R&L Electronics, found it for me. It was an ICOM 730, probably, 25 years old. Plugged in that antenna, 40 meters. The first contact, I called CQ, and the first guy that came back was London, England. I don't care who you are. I don't care how old you are. I don't care what you're doing. If that doesn't wake you up, then you just need to go totally away from me. I mean, that's got to really wake anybody up. It even woke me up. I mean, my God, you got to be kidding me. You're in London? Yes, sir. And so, the young chap just went freako.
Yeah. That was my first experience.
That's how you do it.
I started out with my homebrew breadboard transmitter and a 40-meter dipole. Started operating in about noon. Talked to someone from Minnesota to Wisconsin, and then the sun started setting further out. Pretty soon it's New York City. Pretty soon it's DX. It's like, holy cow, this is so exciting. I've never lost that thrill.
Me either. Well, we're always here. If anybody has questions, you know how to get a hold of me, and we'll make it all happen.
Well, thank you very much for spending an hour of your day, your busy day, and sharing your story. It's been fascinating. There'll be very little editing to the story, and I think that people are going to find it very interesting. So appreciate you and all you do, and come back to the cafe sometime. Join us.
Okay. Thank you very much. So long, everybody.
All right.
Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe Cast. Visit our website at digiconcafe.com to see our extensive digital buffet menu and listen to all of the live conversations on our Cafe on Ice stream. Or this and many more episodes of our Cafe Cast.